Okay, I'd like to call the Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development Committee to order. Today is Monday, January 12th, and let the record state that we do have a quorum. First of all, members, I just want to welcome you back. Look forward to working with you all again this year. We did have an addition to our committee. Leadership has added Senator Rest to the committee, and so we look forward to her participation this year. I know that we have a new seating chart. If it's okay with you, we'll keep it like this. If you have some concerns or issues, just talk to Brian and Sarah, too, going forward. Also, due to the Capitol renovation, we do have a new hearing time. Our new hearing time will be Mondays and Wednesdays from 2 to 3:30. So I would ask members, to the ability you can, please try to be here at 2 o'clock so that we can get started. And obviously, we have a lot of bills to process again this year. We do have a couple new staff members, too. Joe Canock. Where does Joe go? Joe? Welcome to the committee. He's going to be a page this year. He'll be working with us, assigned to this room. So obviously, you'll be busy as the year goes on. And also, we have Thomas Leopold. Is going to be the committee intern this year, and look forward to having him here as well to help out. Other than that, I think everything else is pretty much the same. Today we made an exception. We wanted to meet during this time frame to hear from the Department of Ag, and then also many of you know probably that today is FFA day at the Capitol. They're meeting currently with Commissioner Fredrickson right now. They're going to make their way over here about 2:45, and we'll have a little presentation from them as well. So hopefully we'll be out of here in about an hour or so today. So if there's no questions from members, I think we'd like to bring up Santo Cruz from the Department of Ag, and Charlie's here as well to give us an update on what's going on in the Department of Agriculture at the state of Minnesota. So welcome to the committee, and whenever you guys are ready, just go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, Chairman and members, thank you very much for having the Department of Ag here today. It is good to be back at the Capitol, notwithstanding the construction shutting down every hearing room, but this one, as I understand it. So good to see you all back here again. And again, we are pleased to provide just a short update until the FFA kids get here on the Agri program from MDA. As many of you know, 2014 started out with the ag sector suffering one of the most severe winters in memory. That led to propane shortages, which also augmented the problems with rail. Rail also had difficulties with shipping Bakken oil, raising our basis costs to ship our commodities. And China stopped buying corn for a significant period of time, which led to the corn prices going below the cost of production. So our ag sector faced significant challenges over the past year. And what we're here to do today is to provide some of the good news that happened in agriculture through the AgriFund. I have with me today Charlie Poster, Assistant Commissioner of our Ag Marketing Division, and he's here to give you an update on the program. Thank you.
All right. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks. We very much appreciate the time here. Like I said, we're in front of FFA, so we'll talk until they come, then we'll get out of your hair. But in each of your packets, you should have a two-page foldout with some maps in there. So what I hope to do today is to provide some background on the last roughly 3 years of the Agri program. The members of this committee entrusted the Department of Ag to make investments in agriculture around the state of Minnesota. So what I'd like to do today is inform you of what we've done. So if you could ask my constituent what the state has done in terms of Agri, you could explain and have a good base of knowledge. I'll cover the top three programs in some depth, open it up to questions, and then cover the remaining areas that we've invested in as time allows. So some general background on Agri is acronym stands for Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Fund. This was funded by the tails of the original ethanol payment producer program that ended in Governor Dayton's first year, paying the remaining balances to the plants that were owed, and the rest was placed in this fund at the Department of Agriculture to invest in agriculture around the state of Minnesota. The appropriation is $10.235 million per year, $20.48 for the biennium. $1 million is removed per year to go towards county fairs, and the rest funds the programs that we're going to talk about today. And so we'll start from the top down. These are competitive grant programs. All of them our competitive grant programs where we have an RFP. It's opened up. Farmers and businesses from around the state can apply. The best applications get funded through this. So the first one I'd like to talk about is the Livestock Investment Program. This is one of the largest grant programs through AGRI. As of today, we've received almost 1,000 applicants over the last 3 years for this, asking for $16.7 million in funding. We've been able to fund, so far, 221 farms. So the state has invested $3.5 million in these farms around the state. If you open your sheet, and you should have a map that says Livestock Investment Grant Program, you see we've very conveniently even put the species on the map. So you can see we have good geographical coverage around the state. Dairy has done exceptionally well as beef, swine, poultry. We even have a mink farmer in there. You see that these are really spread out throughout the state, and this has been an incredible leverage on the state of Minnesota's dollars. For every $1 the state of Minnesota puts in, the livestock farmer puts in $9. So it's at least a 9-to-1 leverage of the state's investment. This works as a forward-looking investment where a farmer comes to the Department of Ag and says, I have a farm that I would like to expand or start up, and you can invest in almost anything. The two things you can't invest in are land and the animals themselves. So as you can see, the leveraged investment for the state's $3.49 million is nearly $80 million. This has resulted in 1,238 construction jobs, as well as 327 ongoing jobs from those expansions. It's been an incredible partnership. One positive aspect we see also, in addition to the economic aspect, is that we've been able to transition new farmers into the livestock industry. You get extra points in the application process if you are a beginning or a transitioning farmer. And as you can see, 80% of the people who've received these grants have been farming for less than 10 years. 90% of the grantees are either entering or transitioning to the next generation. We often see this in dairy. We see a mom and a dad wanting to bring home a son or a daughter from college. They go from maybe 100 cows to 200 or 200 to 400 so they can bring in family members. That's been a real positive aspect to this program. Another is that many of the investments, many of the updates address environmental concerns. You see 95% of these address environmental concerns. That often has to do with manure management, zero runoff, things like that. So currently, the most recent round of livestock investment grant closed, and we're currently signing contracts with the farmers, and we expect another 100 to 120 to be awarded. That's going to be another $2 million roughly. So through 3 years of investments at the Department of Ag, we'll have helped 350 farmers expand, bring home sons or daughters to the farm. That's been extremely successful. And this is the most sought-after program through AGRI. We often get five applicants requesting money for every one we're able to fund. At this time, I'd open it up for any questions on this portion, the Livestock Investment Grant.
Any questions, members? If not, thank you.
I'll just take that as a sign of endorsement and success, right? So that, like I said, is the largest program. $4 million over the biennium, or $2 million per year, done in a series of competitive grant rounds. One very good, I'll say one more thing about it, is that a very common sense change we made to this program 2 years ago is that it used to be a reimbursement. A farmer would build a barn or put in an addition, and then they would come to the department and ask for a reimbursement. We changed that to make it more forward-looking, and this had a really significant change. A farmer could come to us and have a project that they weren't able to get financing for. But if they received a grant through this, they could then take that letter of credit to their banker and say, I actually now have 10% of this project paid for, and they're often able to get financing then. So we've seen young people who maybe don't have the capital or resources to build on their own or to get financed on their own, this can be that step to help them be bankable. That's been a really good change that we've made. So we'll move on next to the value-added portion. This is our attempt to help Minnesota value-added businesses across the state. Livestock was the first one. This is to really young and all sorts of entrepreneurs around the state, people who are adding value to the crops, livestock that we grow here in the state. We've had three areas of emphasis on this: meat processing, growing for farm to school and adding for food safety are specific areas that we emphasize, and you get extra points in the application process if you're addressing one of those three. Generally, this is similar to the livestock investment program, where the livestock investment is a 10% reimbursement of a project. This is one quarter of a reimbursement up to $600,000, so it would be a $150,000 maximum reimbursement to a business. And we've had just some great stories with this one. If you take the livestock investment grant and turn it over, you see stars around the state of where these award winners have been in fiscal year 13 and fiscal year 14 around the state. This really puts an emphasis on job creation. We want to, rather than shipping commodities out of the state, which is good, we also want to build upon that and really add value. Kind of the symbolic stories that we have is the common sense updates, like having on-farm dairy processing, people adding cheese shops and bottling milk directly and selling to consumers. The orchard who's taking their apples that maybe can't be sold right to a store and baking things like pies, making things like ciders. This is usually takes a capital investment, but out of that comes more employment. They're building onto their business, usually adding jobs, and that's been the key for this one. Again, like Livestock Investment Grant, this is a competitive grant process. We open this four times a year. We have both employees at the Department of Agriculture score them, but I think more importantly, we have previous winners and people from around the state. People in business score these from General Mills, from other food companies. And so this has been very successful. As you can see, we've had 268 applicants ask for $9.5 million investment. We've been able to help 128 small businesses, value-added ag businesses around the state, investing $3.2 million. For the state's investment, they've been able to leverage $13.6 million. Incredibly successful. Those 61 full-time jobs and 108 part-time jobs came out of this. So again, from cheese making to orchards, a lot of meat markets have used this to expand capacity. One thing that we hear a lot as we travel around the state is that livestock farmers would like to offer their livestock for sale in their part of the community, but it seems like over the last 5 to 10 years, they've had to travel farther and farther for processing. We have people in Duluth who are going to southern Minnesota to get their animals processed, then to take them back up to the northeast part of the state. And we think this is our opportunity to help people who are there to add to meat capacity. So we've invested in a lot of meat markets, both adding capacity and new ones starting. So that's been a particularly successful example. So I'll stop there and also ask for any questions. But, of course, silence will mean acceptance.
Any questions for the Deputy Commissioner? Sarah Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, I just want you to know that we were at a Twin West legislative breakfast last Friday, and it was opened up for questions. The legislative leaders were talking, and so there we were in Minnetonka, you know, Plymouth, all those communities, and the question was, what are you doing for agriculture? And so I can assure you that it really is of interest all over the state, not just in the areas that you think are traditionally important, because everybody knows how important agriculture is to the health and well-being of our state. So thanks.
Thank you.
So, Chairman, not a question, just
Senator,
a comment.
Thank you for the kind words. And if you look at that map, you'll see many of these businesses are in the metro, from people who are putting on greenhouse extension to growing crops right here in the metro. I mean, it's amazing. Yes, outstate Minnesota depends on agriculture, but the metro does as well. When you look at the Cargills, you look at the General Mills of Minnesota, I mean, we're blessed to have that. And here, you know, it's our dream to start another one of those companies by investing at this level. So it's not only rural Minnesota, but the metro as well. So if we flip to the next page, page 2, the top one is farm to school. And the third map that you have in your packet is a representation of the farm to school investments we've made in 13 and 14. As you can see, this has been slightly smaller. The total amount that the state has invested in farms through farm to school will be roughly $750,000 when we finish this fiscal year. In fiscal year 14, we invested $250,000, and fiscal year 15, we're going to roughly $500,000. Again, you see we've had 120 schools apply. We've been able to fund 51 of those with $1 million. The schools themselves, along with partnerships, have leveraged $1.45 million. And, you know, I think a common question that we get when we talk about this is, you know, why is the Department of Agriculture helping with farm to school? And from our perspective, this is about always adding value to agriculture, adding value to rural Minnesota. And through this program, well, it's kind of an ancillary benefit to having school kids eat better local food, and that is a plus. But from our perspective, this is always about farmers. And we think that schools are an untapped resource that should be able to purchase more local foods, more Minnesota-grown foods in their lunches. So often we go around and we would talk to schools asking the question, why don't you purchase more Minnesota-grown food? And it's some really very low barriers. And we did a survey about what would it take, what are some of the barriers you have to overcome to purchase more? And the number one thing they answered was knives. They don't have knives to cook food. Through the 80s and 90s, they largely got out of the habit of baking food from scratch, and they order food, they open it up, and they warm it. And so, actually, we've done several in Hopkins, St. Louis Park. They have great, great, passionate Minnesota-grown food advocates. But they said, you know, we don't have big ovens. We don't have food processors. So we assist them with that. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture will pay for up to half of an investment, up to $50,000, for the school to purchase that. But even $50,000 is a sizable investment for a school to make with today's budget. So we approached Blue Cross and Blue Shield about their willingness to be our partner in this. And they put in $150,000 per year over the last 2 years to help fund this as well. It's part of their center for the Center for Prevention at Blue Cross Blue Shield. And they believe that forming healthy eating habits early will have a positive outcome for their entire life. So they want to get in here and help form healthy eating habits, eating more Minnesota-grown food. So now a school that was making a $100,000 investment could potentially have half of it paid for by the Department of Ag and a quarter or more paid for by Blue Cross Blue Shield, driving down the school's investment to maybe a quarter or less. And again, from our perspective, the ultimate goal is to have them purchase that food from their community, from their neighbors. We view it as a really strong program because property tax dollars fund schools in Minnesota. So we think that's an opportunity to keep local dollars local, going to farmers in their community to purchase not only fruits and vegetables, but dairy, protein, and grains. And it's been successful. As you can see, all over the state, this isn't just a metro-based idea. This has been successful all over. I'll point out one in particular. Otter Tail County has two of them, and they have a food hub where they've come together, and that food hub serves 11 independent school districts. And I think that's a real opportunity for those farmers to touch not only their individual school district, but the ones around it. So this I also think has been successful, and I think this is our opportunity is just limited by the amount that the schools know about this. As we visit more communities want to be involved in this. So schools in Minnesota purchase roughly between $100 and $110 million in food each year. And we think a bigger share of that should be for Minnesota-grown products. So this is our attempt to add to that bottom line. Again, I'll take questions here if there are any on this program or others.
Okay. Just a minute. Senator Eakin?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Assistant Commissioner Poster. I was wondering, as far as the farm-to-school program, if there's been attempts made to work with the SHIP program, the Statewide Health Improvement Program, it seems that would be kind of a natural fit, and some synergy could probably be gotten from working with them.
Mr. Chair, Senators, great question. What we see is schools often kind of stack those opportunities. They might have received a SHIP grant to kind of get their foot in the door, so to speak, and then they build on it maybe 1 or 2 years next. Then they've started to think about how can we use our home community. And one of the biggest investments they make is walk-in cooler storage. If they're going from largely non-perishable foods to perishable, they need more storage. So that's actually it's a multi-year process. And a quick story: almost every school gets involved in the same way. They start to buy apples. Kids are familiar with apples. We have a lot of orchards around the state, almost no matter where you are, and they store really well. So, like for schools, it's not a foreign concept to bring in apples. They're eaten very well. They're accepted. So that kind of starts them down the road of buying more local Minnesota-grown food. Then after they've gone for apples a few years, they might put in a salad bar and work with a local farmer to produce greens, and then they kind of keep going down the road where potentially there is an opportunity to serve meat. That's kind of like the Cadillac standard. When you start purchasing local meats from your community, I'll just give a plug to Ferndale Market, which is a turkey producer, who's been working with their local school. So they always have a really good market, and they get a premium price for like turkey breast meat. But some of the dark cuts, they don't have as many customers for. So they were able to work with their local school district to turn that into hot dogs, which they serve in the school, and they're exceptionally popular. So now the business has a new customer that's purchasing a product that they didn't have as many customers for. The school gets a great protein at a great price that the kids really like. So, but to the ship, back to the ship question, it's often a starting point, and they kind of transition to the farm to school program. You know, we'll see that we've helped 51 schools, but I think we have a lot more. And each school, that investment is going to have tails for years to come when they continue to grow partnerships between their local farmers. Because it's kind of a cart and horse type of thing. Farmers in their area might not know that they could grow for their school. So it's we try and help the farmers through season extension and hoop houses through the value-added business grant, as well as helping the school purchase through the farm to school. So they kind of go tandem, hand in hand. All right, excellent.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner Poster, do you know if you've worked with Anoka Hennepin? Because I know they're an aggregator of food, and then they sell it to other districts. They, you know, they service many of the school districts in that area.
Deputy Commissioner?
Yep, Mr. Chair, Senators. I'm looking at Mary Hanks, our division director, and she said yes. She nodded her head yes. I couldn't remember that
good.
Specific one.
Because if you hadn't, I was going to talk to them, so I'm glad that you had. Thank you.
And I think they're a larger school district in the state.
They
so that's
are?
A real opportunity.
Yep, exactly.
For there. You know, Minneapolis and St. Paul have really good programs, and we work with them. But schools throughout the state are passionate. You know, I'm lucky. I get to visit these schools and see what they're doing, and they are passionate about this. They can see on the school kids' faces, like they get to meet the farmers who bring the food in, and so that's kind of a connection between the question, you know, where does our food come from? There's often this disconnect between where our food is grown and those who eat it. This is another opportunity to overcome that barrier.
Do you think, too, Deputy Commissioner, that this program will continue to be a top priority for the Department of Ag? You talked about the need, and I think, like you said, if it's been successful.
Mr. Chair, Senators, it has been very successful, and we'd like to continue to do this work. I think it's important. I think it adds value to Minnesota farms. And then also, you know, it's not our main focus, but it's a good one. Kids are eating healthier food, Minnesota-grown food. And I think that's I hate the cliche, but it's a win-win. It's positive.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, if we turn that over, the next program I'd like to highlight is you should all have a map that looks like this in your packet. One of the goals of Avery, again, is to add value, always adding value to Minnesota-grown commodities and products. And so the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has always put a focus on adding value to crops. And through that, we're trying to support the use of greater biofuels throughout the state. Specifically here, we're going to talk about ethanol. As you probably know, every gallon of gas in the state of Minnesota, at 99.99, has 10% ethanol in it. The state of Minnesota has 21 ethanol plants around the state, producing roughly 1.1 billion gallons of ethanol, and has an economic impact of $5 billion. We think that we can use more, and we think there are a lot of positives that come out of using more. It increases the value of corn, Minnesota's largest row crop. It's cleaner to burn, so it's good for the state of Minnesota. One of the barriers to using more ethanol is this thing called a blend wall. Today, every car in the state of Minnesota can use E15. That's gasoline that is 15% ethanol and 85% gas rather than 10% ethanol and 90% gas. So every car in the state of Minnesota that's your 2001 or newer can use E15. E85 has about a 10% market share. So for E15, we have almost a 70% market share, and it's growing every day. So every time someone gets rid of a car that's your 2001 or older and gets something newer, they can now use E15. It's good for the consumer because it's cheaper. E15 normally sells between 5 or 10 cents a gallon cheaper than E10. So it's good for the consumer. It's good for Minnesota farmers. a real challenge is that gas stations don't have the infrastructure to use this. So the Minnesota Department of Agriculture put forth $1 million over the biennium, $500,000 a year. And again, wherever possible, we always try and find partnerships. So there's a representative from the Minnesota Corn Growers here. They put forth $2 million. So the Minnesota Corn Growers put in $2 million. The Department of Agriculture put in $1 million for a $3 million pot of funding to support infrastructure for higher ethanol blends. And we came to you 2 years ago to approval of this plan, and we hoped that we could have 40 stations around the state with a focus on the metro that offer E15 and E30 or E85 at every pump at their gas station. And I'm very proud to say we've been exceptionally successful. Today we have 36 stations, and we still have about 6 months left in the rest of the biennium. So I think that we are well on our way to meeting our goal. One of the challenges that we saw in trying to advocate for E15 and higher blends of ethanol is that you might have a station owner who's very excited about using ethanol, and he would put in an E85 station, but often there was only one station at the one pump at the gas station, and it might be in not the most convenient place. So even a person like me who's a real supporter, it would be kind of hard to find the position, the pump at the station, and hard to get there. So the deal that we made with stations was that we would help assist them with either tanks, the piping to bring it up, or the actual pumps themselves to pump, again, E15 and E30 and E85, but you had to put it at every single pump at your station. So this way, when you pull up, it's really very friendly. You don't have to try and find that one pump. You have it at all four station pumps, or as many pumps as you have. And I think hopefully many of you have seen a new cooperative around the state. It's called Minoco. It stands for Minnesota Oil Company. This is a brand that's making the emphasis, putting an emphasis on using higher blends of ethanol. So I have one that's on my way to work. So I often stop there, and at the pumps, I can choose from E15, E30, E85, or regular 10% just at that one pump. And every single pump is like that. So there are many stations who have taken advantage of this, not only Minoco. So we've had good coverage around the state. We hope to have more. But we're well on our way to our goal of 40 that we had laid out 4 years ago. Again, I would take questions on this. And I actually, the American Lung Association is also here in support. They administer the funding. And it's been a good partnership between the Minnesota Corn Growers, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and the American Lung Association to implement this. Okay. Very friendly committee. Appreciate it. Okay. One thing I'd like to talk about in general is that these funds to help with rural investment and investments in agriculture are not led by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, but it's really a group effort. When we started this, we went to our constituency groups, the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Minnesota Farm Bureau, the Minnesota Milk Producers, the Minnesota Pork Producers, the Minnesota Cattlemen Society, the Minnesota Turkey Growers, who tried to use our existing livestock organizations. We went to our advocates in the crop world, the Minnesota Corn Growers, Minnesota Soybean Growers, Minnesota barley growers, the wheat growers, canola. We asked them what their priorities were when it came to investments in rural Minnesota. And since we've started this, each year we've gone back to ask very simple questions. Are these programs working? Are these making a difference in rural Minnesota? And, you know, we'd look at each program and say yes or no. We also asked, are we missing anything? You know, are there things that we're not doing today that you think we should be doing? And after the first year, they had a very big suggestion. They pointed out that the R in Agri stands for research, but we had not allocated any dollars to research. So starting in this biennium, we put significant resources into the R of Agri. If you'll turn to page 3 of your handout, you see the top bullet there is crop research. We had budgeted roughly $1.7 million to research that would have an impact in the near midterm. We kind of gave a 3 to 5 year window for Minnesota, and we've had a really, really excellent request, often led by the University of Minnesota, but also MinSCU institutions, as well as just groups of farmers that have come together. The goal of this funding is to improve the profitability, the quantity, or the productivity of crops we grow here in Minnesota. We currently have $2.1 million that are being reviewed. We think that we will fund 11 projects through this funding, and these are excellent and varied. I'm sorry I don't have a nice map to show where we've done these throughout the state, but we'll get one. And these have really been diversified. We have things as kind of unique as a lot of both breweries and hard apple cider makers to distilleries making vodka here in Minnesota. We think this is a real opportunity as well. We often talk to orchards who say they get calls weekly asking for cider to make hard apple cider. And we think this is an opportunity to kind of differentiate our orchards, diversify our orchards to grow different apples. I didn't know this when we started, but Sweet Tango, Zestars, all those fancy U of M apples don't actually make the best cider. It's the tart apples, Harrelson's, that are the ones that are sought after, but we don't have a big base there. Now, something that we definitely could grow more of. So that was kind of an exciting, it's been a fun process, as well as more traditional. We have things like looking at how to improve the soybean aphid resistance through soybean plants, increasing productivity of more traditional plants. So this also has been very well received. We've tried to have good geographic distribution as well as the crops that we're going. So again, I'll take a pause here if we have questions on some of these. Good. Excellent. Okay, if we go down, we'll do the next two, beginning and transitioning farmers and sustainable ag. One challenge we see as we look around the state is the ever-increasing age of the average farmer in Minnesota. Today, I think it's in the high 50s or low 60s. So we wanted to see what we could do as a department to overcome that challenge. And what we have found is we can help with new farmers who are either transitioning to take over maybe a parent's or a relative's farm, as well as maybe getting into the business outside of that, is going to farm business management. So for farmers who want to enroll in farm business management at their local school, often one of the MINSCU organizations around the state, is that we'll help them with a scholarship to apply toward their tuition. And we've been able to help 234 farmers so far around the state, and these are often multi-year awards that they can use as they go through the farm business management training. As you can see at the bottom, fiscal year 15, we began with $300,000 available for scholarships, and we're letting this, we're trying to get the word out through the MINSCU system, through the farm business management system, that if you have people who are coming and they're in that transition phase, this is really an opportunity for them to help assist with that. I'd also open it up here to questions.
Deputy Commissioner, I know that there's been some concern with that farm business management, and I appreciate you guys kind of taking the lead to work with MINSCU, and obviously Senator Bonhoff chairs that committee. Due to the applications, do we think we're kind of making a dent in this area, or does it seem like it's been successful so far?
Yep, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think we're ramping up. It took us a while to figure out exactly how we wanted to assist new and beginning farmers. And so the first, I would say, fiscal year 14, it was kind of a period that we were getting the word out to our friends in farm business management in MINSCU that this was available to them. But I think this current fiscal year, we've seen higher use of these than we had in the first year. So oftentimes when you create a program from scratch, it's the first year can be really a year of building, where it's letting the people know that this is an opportunity that they can take. And I think this we'll see use continue to rise through the end of the year.
Great. Thank you. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, Deputy Commissioner, are we finding enough offerings of the program? I think in some areas I'm hearing about the fact that some of these programs are being discontinued, and is that getting to be a problem as far as availability?
Deputy Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Senators, that I have heard those stories as well. And from our perspective, we're trying to make sure that if they want to be in it, we will assist them with tuition. And the that decision about where it's offered is really at the Department of Education and through MNSCU, but we just want to make sure that if they are interested in taking it, we're there to assist them, because those first years of farming, they often find that they need assistance with cash flow and business planning and operating loans, and so we're here to help them get through that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would say go ahead.
Senator Deems has a question.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think what Senator Weber's referring to is the loss of farm business management instructors, and we did, I think we've just recently lost four more, so we do have an issue in that program, and that we have a lot of folks that would like to be in the program, but we're starting to not have the availability of the instructors to continue some of these programs throughout the state. So I think that's, you know, certainly an issue we need to address.
Mr. Chair, Senators, we've heard those same stories as well. Okay. I see that the FFA kids are here, and I've filled as much time as I could. Well, I hope.
No.
Mr. Chair, if I just may add one final thing before we transition out. One of the things that Assistant Commissioner Poster covered early on about the livestock investment grants was that $1 of state investment leveraged $9 of private investment. And one of the things that we didn't get a chance to talk to about today, and I hope that in future hearings we will, well, be able to bring in farmers and who've tried to bring in Senator Daughters, where they've actually come to us and told us that the agri investment made the difference of why they were bankable. So they went to their local bank, they went to their local lending partners, and they were not going to get the loan. And when they came to the Department of Ag and they had a good idea and they were scored well by the private and the public sector, they got a letter of award, they went back to the bank, and they became bankable through that program. And I think that's very important for you all to know, that that has made the difference for many, many farmers in Minnesota.
Great. Deputy Commissioner, maybe I missed it. Could you just touch base a little bit on the next gen portion?
Yes, absolutely.
Then we'll get the students up here. But I think that's important. I know that I serve on that with Senator Tomasoni and Senator Western. We've done some nice things in that area as well.
Mr. Chair, Senators, NextGen is a research program that tries to invest in research projects that have a slightly longer-term payback for the state. This came out of the it started with solely renewable fuels, and then 2 years ago the legislature made a change that also was able to include green chemistry or biochemicals for funding. And we have as I noted already, we have 21 ethanol plants or biofuel plants around the state, but we also have a number of emerging companies that want to, rather than making transportation fuels from a renewable feedstock, they would produce renewable chemicals. And we have one down in southwestern Minnesota, Gevo in Laverne, and we also have the central Minnesota plant that was just sold to a Green Plain Renewable Energy. That sold to another company that wants to make renewable plastics or renewable chemicals out of feedstocks. And they were actually given award through the NextGen committee to transfer that plant from an ethanol plant to a renewable chemicals plant. And so that has really tried to help diversify our transportation fuels and plants. So there's the opportunity. So in the future, every plant that we have, the 21 we have, could not only make transportation fuels, but also potentially make renewable chemicals at that plant. And so the NextGen committee has awarded plants to try and diversify that part of the agriculture industry, if that's kind of a rough summary.
Right. No, that's very helpful. Thank you. Thank you both. That was a nice presentation. Obviously, we look forward to working with you during this legislative session. Agriculture is a big part of what this committee has to deal with. So if there's no further questions from the members, thank you, guys. Send our regards to the commissioner. And we'll
Thanks
see
for your
you
time.
Both back here again real soon. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, members, we saw a bunch of the students come in. It's an exciting day. We're glad that they're able to join us. The next item on our agenda is the Minnesota FFA students. They're in St. Paul for the 2015 Ag Policy Experience. Students from all over the state participate in this event, and it's a great opportunity for the students to learn about government and interact with legislatures. Sarah Dornick is coordinating the activities and serves as the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agriculture Education Leadership Council, which Senator Coonan, Dames, and I serve on that council. She's been doing a wonderful job since the time that she stepped in that role in mid-2013. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you to kind of give us a little bit about what's been going on, and then we'll be glad to hear from some of the students and Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator, and members of the committee. As he said, I'm Sarah Dornick, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, or MAELC for short, since it's such a long name. We're a 17-member legislative council that started in 1997 to promote and expand agricultural education opportunities in Minnesota. As the Senator mentioned, we have representatives from many different organizations, including the Department of Agriculture, Department of Education, the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, University of Minnesota, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the FFA Foundation. And then we have six legislators on our board, three from the Senate, three from the House, and then two governor appointees. Our funding comes from two different sources. One comes through the Ag Special through the University of Minnesota base budget, and that's for our operating funds. The second half of our budget comes through the Agriculture Committee, and that goes through the Department of Agriculture through to us, and that's for special projects and grants only, which is a really important part because part of our state statute is that we run a grants program. MAELC has decided to run it in two different areas. One is statewide and regional projects, and then half is we spend on local programs, trying to get back to your local districts. So that's kind of the one piece that we're really, you know, noticeably known for, but one of the main things we do is provide leadership for statewide initiatives. And for example, one statewide initiative I'm sure you're going to hear about a lot during session is the agriculture teacher shortage. There's lots of shortages in all areas, but we particularly in agriculture have one. Minnesota was actually selected as part of one of 11 states to participate in a national program called the State Teach Ag Results, or STAR program. STAR is a pilot project to look at recruitment and retention strategies. So this is a national issue. Minnesota falls right in there. And so MAELC is leading that our state team, or the state contact, and providing leadership for that program. The reason the state the teacher shortage is so important is for the programs such as that these students here participate in. We refer to them as Agriculture, Food, and Natural Resource Programs, or AFNR. So you might hear me refer to that. It's really important to the state economy. As you know, Minnesota, one in five jobs is related to agriculture, and these AFNR programs really help students explore that career interest to further pursue careers and fill that future workforce. And so that's why we find it really important. You should have received a handout. That would be some nice statistics and things for you to reference, but there is one piece on that first page. If you would look at towards the bottom, it's what we refer to as our three-circle model, and this is really what we determine our a strong agriculture, food, and natural resource program to be based upon. And so that first piece, of course, is the classroom. That's that content knowledge students need to start. We teach everything from animal science, plant science, welding, shop. We teach forestry, wildlife, leadership courses. Everything runs the gamut. And each program is different depending where they are in their state and what their local program needs to have. The other piece is the supervised agriculture experience, and we consider that the career exploration piece. That's outside of the classroom. That's something that's an additional. So you may think of a traditional piece such as raising livestock or selling vegetables on a side market, working at a dairy farm. But we also have the non-traditional pieces, so they could do research projects or community service projects. So those are a key piece. And then the third circle, of course, is the leadership aspect that most of you are familiar with, the blue jackets that come to the Capitol once in a while. And that's the leadership piece. And so the FFA is very important to that model. However, I do want to mention a local school district cannot have an FFA chapter without having the ag program. So they have to have the classroom pieces. So you can't just have an FFA chapter. It's an intercurricular model, so that's kind of different than maybe some of the other student organizations. So that's part of the reason I bring that up to show you what a strong model is because we need quality teachers to help make those strong programs. And so those quality teachers, again, is an initiative that you'll probably hear about this session. And so that's something we would work on for MAELC. There's lots of other projects, but that's just a short example today. The third piece that really we do work on is we are a resource for the state legislature. So we provide policy recommendations. We serve as a resource for anything you need. So please feel free to contact our office at any time. Again, you have committee members who are on our board and some other great supporters of Ag Ed I see on this committee. So that ends my brief presentation of MAELC. I could either answer questions now or introduce our two my fellow testifiers.
Okay. Is there any questions for Ms. Dornick? Not at this time.
So today, as you'll notice, we have 27 students here in their blue jackets. This is different. This is earlier. You may also, February 26th will be FFA Day at the Capitol. We usually bring about 300 students to the Capitol, maybe less with all the construction this year. But this is particularly an ag policy experience students. And so these students were selected. They were nominated by their teacher, a max of two per chapter. So these are the cream of the crop, what we think that are our up-and-coming future leaders for FFA. And so today I just have two students that they found out this morning they were testifying. So nothing like throwing them in there like that. So I'll just let you two introduce yourself and go take it away.
Hi, my name is Mackenzie Barth, and I am a junior from the Uppsala FFA chapter. My experience with agricultural education started when I was in seventh grade, and I was in my first ag class. I also joined FFA that year. Since then, I have become an agricultural teacher's assistant, and I have taken ag classes whenever I can. My involvement with agricultural education has brought me to join FFA, and it has blessed me with the opportunities to learn and practice incredibly valuable workplace skills like public speaking and communication, just to name a few. What we need to do as agricultural advocates and as legislators, such as yourselves, is to support agricultural education in any way we can, because everyone needs to eat. Nearly every industry in Minnesota is connected to agriculture in some way. And 30% of the Minnesota GDP is agricultural income. Agriculture is the basis for the Minnesotan economy, so we need to support the industry from the very beginning in the school. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, Ms. Barth. That was very nice. Any questions for Ms. Barth? Welcome to the committee.
Okay, my name is Harley Brown, and I'm from the Sleepy Eye FFA chapter. I'm a junior, and I joined FFA as an eighth grader. The reason I didn't join right away was because I really didn't think I would have any future in agriculture. But I joined an ag class because my friends had a lot of fun, and now I plan to become an agricultural education teacher. Through my experience in FFA, I've realized a lot of the importance in agriculture that it holds in our community. And I just want you to keep that in mind when you're making policies and stuff for education, because it is such an important part of our community, especially for young people. I would not be the person that I am today without my experiences in FFA. So, yeah.
Ms. Brown, can you tell us a little bit about what you guys have been up to today?
Today, we've had a few sessions with a few lobbyists and other people, and they've told us just a little bit about some of the things that they do and some of their careers in agriculture.
Chair Sparks, yep. Tonight some of you have already RSVP'd, but we do want to invite you all, have been invited, to come to the legislative reception this evening. It's from 6 to 8 at the Crown Plaza, and it's a really good experience for the students, from also for you to, they love to just find out what you guys do, what is your job, what do you like, what don't you like, what's your community like. And so it's a really fun reception. It's probably the only one with punch. but we'll have a glass ready for you if you'd like to come. but they really would love to see you all if you can come. And tomorrow they'll be doing some more. They'll be here with some mentors. We'll be testifying in the House Finance Committee, and then they'll be participating in a mock Senate tomorrow afternoon. And so they had to review three bills, one on GMO labeling, one on the wolf hunt, and one on starting school before Labor Day. And so they'll be each required to speak about those. So,
very good.
I'd love to hear
that. Senator Bonhoff and then Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dorning, I've heard a lot about the teacher shortage in agriculture. Do we have programs in our colleges and universities that teach teachers to be ag teachers? Do you know if that exists and where?
Mm-hmm. Ms. Dornick?
Chair Sparks, Senators. Yes, so currently the University of Minnesota is the only place that licenses agriculture teachers. This spring we'll have about 15 student teachers, but we do know that not all of them actually enter the classroom. They do get stolen by ag business and other, they're great they're great people, great candidates for future jobs. So the two other programs are starting. Southwest Minnesota State Marshall and the University of Minnesota Crookston have both been looking at starting teacher licensure for agriculture programs. They're a little bit farther out, and of course, just because you're starting teachers, it would take a few years before those teachers are going to be really prepared to be in the classroom. But they are looking at starting that licensure piece there as well.
Okay. Very good. Senator Weber?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Dornick, thank you for coming and for your presentation. And thank you to all of you as FFA members for being here. And, you know, sometimes you go through the process of the experience and you don't really think about what the future holds. But 40-some years ago, as a two-term FFA chapter president, creed speaking contest state winner, and public speaking, I find myself drawing back to a lot of things that I learned in FFA and rely on them a great deal in my work here, as well as my real world back in Laverne. So anyway, congratulations for being chosen to be here, and good luck in your experience here, and I look forward to visiting with you tonight.
Very good. Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Dornick, do you think the students would be interested in just introducing themselves each individually and saying where they're from? We'd certainly appreciate just hearing where they're from. And
great. If Senator,
that's a great idea.
Great. Why don't we start on that side and work this way around? So why don't you stand up, say your name, your chapter?
I'm Abby Penzenseather, and I'm from the Chisago Lakes FFA chapter.
I'm Janelle Huners, and I'm also from the Chisago Lakes FFA chapter.
I'm Amanda Stafford, and I'm from the Forest Lake FFA chapter.
I'm Casey Golish, and I'm from the Sleepy Eye FFA chapter.
Hi, I'm Kirsten Barrett, and I'm from the Glencoe Silver Lake FFA chapter.
I'm Clarissa Walbotny from the Battle Lake FFA chapter.
Hello, I'm Zachary Strickland from the Staples Valley FFA chapter.
My name is Katie Benson. I'm also from the Staples Valley FFA chapter.
Hi, I'm Kim Sauber, and I'm also from the Staples Valley FFA chapter.
I'm Samuel Manning from the Triton FFA chapter.
I'm Emily Amundsen from the Dasso Cocaine FFA chapter.
Hi, I'm Spencer Flood, also from the Dasso Cocaine FFA chapter.
I'm Jacob Waltz from Buffalo FFA.
I'm Zachary Lotsky from the Civil East FFA chapter.
I'm Amanda Barrow from the Elderly FFA chapter.
I'm Adam Steamerun, and I'm from the United South Central FFA chapter.
I'm Chloe Anderson, I'm from the Civil East FFA chapter.
I'm Sarah Malinowski from the Civil East FFA chapter.
Hi, I'm Erica Robertson, and I'm from the Rotom Zepa FFA chapter.
Thomas Hornick from the Hutchinson FFA chapter.
I'm Mason Lynn Felsen from Randolph FFA chapter.
I'm Kayla Kutsky. I'm from the Atwater Cosmos Grove City FFA chapter.
I'm Shannon from the Randolph FFA chapter.
I'm Ellen LaFave. I'm from the Buffalo FFA chapter.
Very good. Thank you, guys. We got quite a cross-section there from the entire state. And appreciate you guys for being here. It's always a good day, I think, when us senators get to see the young students, you know, the future is really right here in this room, and it looks pretty bright. So thank you for that. Are there any further questions for the students or for Ms. Dornick? If not, I thank you. I hope you enjoy the rest of your time here. Again, I think, as Sarah said, there is a reception tonight. If you folks can get down there, that would be nice. I want to thank Adam, too, for the wonderful invite. I've had a lot of invites to many receptions, and I think that you could probably give lessons on how to send an invite. So thank you for that. With that, members, I think that will complete our business for today. We will not be meeting Wednesday, and next Monday's a holiday, so stay tuned. Brian will try to get a message out to you guys right away. But obviously, we talked about ag and farm business management. Senator Weber and Senator Dames obviously will be a topic that we're going to discuss, and certainly the ag teacher shortage. I think we're all very aware of that. So with that, thank you much, Mayor Mers, and meeting's adjourned.
This one's the one.
Marshall's program. This semester. $500,000.